We're crisscrossing the state this hour, talking with the helpers here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. So in recent days, we've heard about distilleries retooling to manufacture hand sanitizer, graduate students offering their lab skills to help run medical tests. We've heard neighbors offering to pick up groceries for homebound seniors, pastors launching online worship services to provide comfort, teachers launching impromptu online classes for kids. We're looking at the many ways people have stepped up during these extraordinary times. Most of all, what are you doing now to help in your community? Could you use a little extra help? What resources are available where you live? How are people pulling together? Share at 800-642-1234. Our first stop is the southern part of the state. Michael Johnson is CEO of the Boys and Girls Club of Dane County. Michael, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hey, thanks for having me on, and thanks for covering this.
Your clubs are closed now. How are your families and your kids being served right now?
I mean, it's challenging. I mean, you look at the number of people who are going on unemployment, the number of restaurants that's closing, the number of people who are already underemployed. It's a challenging time, and it has, impacted. You know, this virus has impacted one of our employees, at Boys and Girls Clubs. So we're just trying to do, what we can to raise resources for the community to feed kids throughout Dane County. And I'm pleased to announce, as of this morning, we started a fund that has already raised $885,000.
I was watching that fund yesterday where it was just shy of $500,000, and just watching those numbers go up and up. Even this morning, it has climbed still more. You just must feel so much gratitude.
To raise money under a situation like this, it's on one hand, it's nice that people are stepping up, but there's so many, kids and families and single mothers and part-time employees that are struggling, and the emails that I'm getting through social media and through text messages, you could just feel the pain, the hurt that our neighbors are going through. So we just wanted to step up and to be a blessing and a service to other people. So we're going to distribute these funds and put this money out on the streets right away to help people with medical supplies, to provide meals for kids, to work with shelters, or look to identify gap funding that they may need. We're going to help displaced college students. We're going to find volunteers to make sure that our seniors are good and to address issues around transportation. And then we're also going to provide direct dollars for financial hardships for businesses and part-time restaurant workers. And so I'm glad that the community is stepping up. I'm hoping we can raise $1 million by Monday. So by the following Monday, we'll put these resources directly into those who need it the most.
Michael Johnson is CEO of the Boys and Girls Club of Dane County, and we're looking at the situation right now, his approach to COVID-19 with the resources going out to the community. So, Michael, how is your staff doing right now? You mentioned one person is affected by COVID-19.
Yeah, it's, there's a lot of anxiety, and that's not just Boys and Girls Clubs in our sector. People are wondering about their personal health and their families. Two, they're worried about our kids, and particularly with some of the populations of young people that we work with, their well-being and how they're doing. Our staff are also worried about, their parents and their grandparents and their siblings. And there's anxiety around whether or not, particularly in the nonprofit sector and the restaurant sector and small businesses, whether or not people will have jobs, 6 months from now. And so I've tried to constantly communicate with my team. We've asked them to take 2 weeks off. And we found enough resources to pay every one of our employees over the next 2 weeks. But we took a huge hit. We had a scheduled fundraiser that we canceled last Saturday, the Madison Shamrock Shuffle, which is a $100,000 fundraiser. So we put our own needs on the back end to raise money for our community. And so I'm hoping the announcement that we make today with United Way on Facebook Live We're going to announce the details of the $885,000 we raised, how we're going to disperse those dollars out to the community, challenge our county to get that number past 1 million, and then begin to utilize those resources to provide some seed money until we find out what happened with the state and federal government to ensure that resources get to the appropriate people.
Well, Michael, let's bring in a call now. Farhan from Madison is with us. Hi, Farhan.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What is your situation like?
So I represent another initiative locally. It's called CV19Assist.com. And one of the things I've noticed is that there are so many groups that are like Facebook groups and spreadsheets that are popping up with plenty of private information on there, too. But with many of these groups, what they're observing is that there are plenty of volunteers that want to help, but they're not getting very many people that are actually asking for help. So I was curious to see if the other listeners and then yourself have observed that same issue, and if there are thoughts around how best to get in front of the people that are actually looking for a lot of this help.
Yeah, Michael, what would you suggest there? Connecting volunteers to the people who needed most. How do you do that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I would encourage your listeners to go to the United Way of Dane County Facebook page. At 9 o'clock this morning, Renee Moe, who's the CEO of that organization, is going to talk about volunteer.org. And we're going to ask people to go directly to that website. We're going to work with our nonprofit partners throughout the region to identify opportunities. So, for example, we are beginning to put food carts across the city to make sure the kids are getting healthy meals, and we're working with an organization called Feed Kitchen. And so we're calling it Feed to Go, and we're hiring local cooks to prepare meals for kids. We need volunteers that can, through Feed Kitchen, to deliver meals to seniors and those who are disabled. And all those kinds of opportunities would be on volunteeryourtime.org through United Way.
So it's called volunteeryourtime.org through United Way. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, let's bring in Amy now in Madison with an idea on volunteerism. Amy, hi.
Hi, how's it going?
I'm all right. What can you add here?
I just wanted to add that the Facebook page that's popped up called Dane County Neighbors Helping Neighbors has been my avenue for volunteerism. I've been able to assist with a high pregnancy, a woman experiencing high risk pregnancy, and I was able to deliver much needed like food to her and her animals because she couldn't get out. Also, I was able to redistribute some food that was going bad at a dormitory that was closed and bring it to a local restaurant, Liliana's, and they are going to get it out to the local community in Fitchburg. And there are many posts happening constantly on that page, and I've just found it a really great outlet. And there are people on there asking for direct help, and I've been able to make contact directly with those families in need.
Well, Amy, thank you for sharing that Facebook group, Dane County Neighbors Helping Neighbors. And Michael, thank you for spending a few minutes with us. We really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you. And just so you know, that Facebook page that she just announced, they are absolutely amazing. There's thousands of people from Dane County that is communicating on that page, and I'm glad she raised that.
Michael Johnson, CEO of the Boys and Girls Club of Dane County, we've been talking about how community groups are rallying at this moment. Coming up, we head to Milwaukee to look at a program packing lunches for hundreds of seniors. How are you helping people in need during the pandemic? We're at 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. The Hunger Task Force in Milwaukee has an interactive map of places where food is being provided safely and reliably to people in need. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're with us for The Morning Show. We're going around the state, and access to food and supplies has become a major focus during the pandemic. Some stores are struggling to keep up with demand as families stock up for social distancing, and soon there may be added pressure on food banks as major employers cut workers or reduce hours. So where are you turning for help? Is it a food bank? Is it a neighborhood center, your neighbors? How are you trying to help people who need it? And who are you most concerned about? Be part of this 800-642-1234. Sherry Tesler is Executive Director of the Hunger Task Force in Milwaukee. She's been there for more than two decades, working with Milwaukee's homeless, survivors of sexual assault, and adults with mental illness. Sherry, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Glad to be here.
All right, tell us how your organization is holding up right now.
Things are a little bit stressed out. Hunger Task Force is a free and local food bank that serves all of Milwaukee County. We typically distribute about 10 million pounds of food annually, but this last week we have been pushing a lot of food out to the door to our food pantry system, as well as our homeless shelters, and we have been encouraging our soup kitchens to shutter.
So with your soup kitchens shutting down, what does that mean for getting the food out there, that wholesome food, to people who need it?
Well, there's a deep concern for the homeless. They normally would eat at a soup kitchen one or two times a day. There are people living on the streets that don't have access to food or cooking facilities, and they would normally visit the soup kitchen and get a prepared meal, but we need to close those locations down because we can't have communal eating anymore.
You know, food banks and other resources, social distancing must be a big challenge because at a food bank and a soup kitchen, you work shoulder to shoulder with your neighbors and other helpers. How are you getting around that at the food bank?
We are engaging in social distancing while we're building food boxes for people in need. We keep people apart on our conveyor belt and our line while we're building those boxes, and we're reducing our groups from 20 to 10.
Are you short at all of volunteers? Do you have the help that you need right now?
It's been a little bit of a struggle. Initially, a lot of corporate groups just had policies so that they closed down and couldn't come, and we were relying on them. So now we're relying on individuals. And so if people are out of work and they're at home and they feel healthy, we're encouraging them to come in and help us out.
And when they come in and help you out, how many volunteers do you need? What is the jobs like? What can they do?
We are building boxes. One box is called Stock Box, and that is for low-income seniors. That group is particularly vulnerable, and we need to deliver those boxes to where they live. Our staff are managing the delivery side of the house, but we need to build those boxes. So we've got about 5,000 boxes on hand, but we use about 10,000 boxes per month. So we need to get in front of that curve. We're also building boxes for families here at our facility, and we have morning and afternoon shifts for that work.
How much food or how much in that box will help a family? How long can you survive off of a box?
We're trying to get them a two-week supply of food.
And what are some of the items that are in the boxes? Do you have enough food items on hand?
Yeah, what's really sort of kind of crazy and cool is that we had a problem with trade wars before the pandemic, and so a lot of food had already been delivered to food banks nationwide, and so there are not food shortages, and that's great news for everyone.
So you have enough food on hand. Right now you need more assembly crews to get these boxes together. What are you hearing around Milwaukee and around Wisconsin from other food banks that are doing this work right now? What are they telling you?
They also say they have a shortage of volunteers. Food banking and food pantry work really is about volunteers, and a lot of them are retired older adults, and that's the group that's been told to stay home. And so a lot of groups have actually closed or shuttered temporarily, waiting their volunteer group to come back. And so it's a bit of a struggle, especially in rural parts of the state.
So as you provide food boxes to these people, families, organizations, are you seeing an uptick in need? And what does your capacity look like right now?
We are. Food pantries are reporting nearly twice as many people arriving at their door. Some of that could be because a different pantry is closed. Some of it could be because of recent unemployment, especially in the service industry. So we're doing the best that we can to get more food out. We have messaged all of our food pantries that they should not worry and that we will get the food to them and we can fill emergency orders.
We're talking with Sherry Tesler, Executive Director at Hunger Task Force in Milwaukee, looking at her organization's efforts to get food to people who need it during this pandemic. You can join in with resources in your community, how you are lending a hand through volunteerism. The number is 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. So, Sherry, for a family who has never used or depended on a food bank before, can you walk us through those steps? What is it like? Where would they go?
They should, if they're in Milwaukee, check our interactive map to make sure that a program is open. They would need to bring their ID to that pantry when it's open. Typically, there would be an interview and a signature, and all of those things have been put to the wayside. We're doing sort of a drive-through approach, an outdoor approach, and so it's literally curbside service where we would bring you a box of prepacked food. People shouldn't feel embarrassed or ashamed if they need assistance. The other thing that they can do if they have a computer at home and a smartphone is they can go online and apply for the food share program.
Are you seeing any lines anywhere? And is that a concern to you if people congregate because they're waiting in line?
We've asked the pantries to practice social distancing, but we've also directed, especially for the seniors, that we will do a drive-through. So people don't even need to get out of their car. All they have to do is pop their trunk, and we will place the food box in the trunk of their car.
Do the items in the food box, do they change much, or do you have some staple items that you always put in these food boxes?
There's always going to be milk and peanut butter and cereal. There'll be chews, canned vegetables, canned fruits. What will change up is the meat item that we may offer. We have a lot of frozen meat on hand, both pork, chicken products. And then you're going to see, you know, things like canned tuna.
You've worked in this type of nonprofit for decades. Do you have a crisis plan, and are you using it right now? How are you responding with what how history has informed you?
Yeah, I've been here for 23 years, and I haven't seen anything quite like this, although this time last year we were looking at a government shutdown, and we did develop a plan for that. This is a different kind of crisis, and we do have a crisis plan posted on our website as well, and we are following that plan to the letter at present. We're hoping that we don't have to sort of fall deeper into closures, but we know what we're going to do at that point as well.
What might that next step look like if there are further closures? What would it look like?
Well, we keep coming to work and we keep building these boxes, but we distribute them probably in broader-based community locations that are well-known to everyone. So we might occupy, for instance, a parking lot at the mall. Even though the mall is closed, we'll be there with a truck and we'll have a drive-through and we'll pass out food.
So your interactive map right now is a really good resource to figure out where that food is and how, you know, people can access it.
Absolutely. They can click on any one of the icons. The Milwaukee Public Schools continue to provide meals for children from their settings as well as homework assignments. The parochial and charter schools are also doing the same, and so that would be a place to go for child meals. The boxes of food are going to be at the food pantries, and then for seniors, we are either delivering to their public housing building or we're conducting drive-throughs for the seniors at senior dining sites.
So, Sherry, what is your toughest challenge right now? What are you grappling with?
Really, the volunteer side of things and building those boxes. I would feel a lot more confident if I had 10,000 boxes on hand, and I really only have about 5,000 boxes built.
So you really need those volunteers to turn out. And you said it is real. You can literally show up, or do you have to do something online in order to become a volunteer?
Yeah, we ask people to go online and sign up, and then we screen them and assign them. But we've got open shifts in the morning and in the afternoon. And at one of our locations, we are operating 7 days a week, so people can volunteer on weekends as well.
So every day there's a new challenge. What is your challenge today? What is ahead of you today? What does your day entail?
I talk with the state about how to shutter the soup kitchens, as well as a program that is sort of a future look called Farm to Table, organizing what remains of the staff that needs to be here at Hunger Task Force, and then working remotely with our team to just conduct day-to-day business.
Sherry, thank you for joining us.
I was glad to be here. I hope everyone stays well and stays assured that everything is going to be okay.
Sherry Tesler, Executive Director of the Hunger Task Force in Milwaukee. We're talking about ways that people are trying to support one another. The Salvation Army in Fond du Lac continues to operate a food pantry, but customers are now urged to stay in their parked cars and wait for volunteers to bring them the food. People at high risk for the coronavirus may be eligible for deliveries. So how is your community adapting? How are you trying to help but also practice social distancing? What ways have you found to help your neighbor? Join in, share, 800-642-1234. Coming up, our conversation continues with a look at how a church in Superior is responding to the pandemic. We check in with Pastor Bridget Jones right after this news update on the Ideas Network. On a Friday, you're with us for the morning show as we learn about the response by community groups to coronavirus. I'm Kate Archer Kent. So now we're visiting a Lutheran church in Superior. Across the state, churches are places where families get together and receive childcare and provide support to people in need. But the pandemic is forcing church services to shut down. It's prompting faith leaders to offer public reassurances like this from Milwaukee Archbishop Jerome Listecki.
And I encourage others to do the same thing, and that's say a prayer. Pray. You know, God has not abandoned us, and that God will be with us during this period of time, as he has been with us during other times of crisis in our life.
How are you supporting others amid the pandemic? Is your church providing food or financial assistance? How are you staying socially or spiritually connected? Join in your stories, your ideas, 800-642-1234. Pastor Bridget Jones is the leader of Bethel Lutheran Church in Superior. Pastor Bridget, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
So your church has been calling on its members to check in with their well-being this week. How are you staying connected from afar?
Yeah, I think, it's been really important for us to be able to say that our church services are not canceled, that we are moving them online, that, we are still gathering as the body of Christ, even though we are not seeing each other face-to-face. And so we just live-streamed our first service on Wednesday, and we will do it again on Sunday morning. We've moved our Bible studies to Google Hangouts, and we just sent out a really big newsletter recently that had our entire Sunday liturgy in it, along with guidelines for how people could worship at home, whether they're tuning into the live stream or not. And so really it's we're working even harder than we normally do to make sure that people stay connected, they stay connected spiritually as well.
How is this transition for you? How did the live stream go?
I'll be honest, there were little bugs. You know, you don't think about the fact of, oh, my phone has to be really charged or else it might die in the middle of this worship service. Am I in the frame? I can't really tell. There's challenges that I didn't think about, like, does our Wi-Fi reach out to our sanctuary? How's the service in here? So it's been a little nerve-wracking, dealing with new technologies that we haven't even thought about using before. But I think it's important to make sure that we catch as many people as possible.
How are your church members holding up?
So far, so good, actually. I have a lot more offers of help than I have requests for help right now. I know that might change, but I think right now people are very aware that that there are needs out there, and they are so willing to step in and to try to meet them.
How are families in your church handling the closures of schools and libraries and restaurants and so many places that communities gather?
Yeah, I think it's really hard right now, especially people who are already at risk for being most isolated are elderly, are vulnerable populations, and those are the ones that people are really saying, don't come outside your house, don't gather in the ways that you normally do. And this is the population that's also least likely to be able to take advantage of these virtual church services and Bible studies. And so, I think people are really struggling, but also we're our congregation, I divided up our active list into chunks of 10 people, and I had our council call them, being able to say, if you need anything, let us know. If you need someone to talk to, if you need groceries, let us know so that we're able to reach out to the people who are especially struggling.
Oh, so you basically divide things up into smaller chunks in order to make sure that you can do that one-on-one interaction with people and make sure you can check in on them.
Yeah. I think this crisis is really showing kind of the benefits of technology and also kind of the setbacks of it, the limitations, the ways that maybe we haven't thought about distancing each other already. And so this really is I'm taking it as an opportunity for us to connect even more deeply with the people we've been going to church with, but maybe haven't really talked to for a couple of years. Now is really a time to deepen those connections in the midst of a crisis.
We're discussing the COVID-19 pandemic and how local organizations and churches are trying to support others in the community. Pastor Bridget Jones is here. She's the leader of Bethel Lutheran Church in Superior. Are you a faith leader? Are you a community volunteer? How are you trying to support others in these times? How is your church doing? How is your synagogue, your temple doing? Share your story, your situation, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Pastor Bridget, where are you finding support right now? Because often faith leaders, they're the ones who take so much of the brunt of other people's hardship. Where do you go?
Yeah, I'm finding a lot of support from my congregation that, you know, it is really hard to be the one to make these executive decisions. Before the edict from Governor Evers came out, kind of limiting groups to 10 people, there was a lot of indecision about, do I get to make this call? What if I call too early? What if I call too late? You know, how do I protect people and be able to say it's so important for us to gather? And so I also find a lot of support from colleagues. There's so many Facebook groups right now of faithful people trying to say, how do we do this together? How do we figure out, how do we give each other resources? And then my synod as well, the Northwest Synod of Wisconsin, has been checking in with all of their pastors to make sure, you know, are you doing okay? Can we offer you more resources? Sometimes it's almost overwhelming about, like, there's so many resources, which ones do I use? But I appreciate that much more than trying to figure out I have nothing and I don't know what to do.
Are you on regular conference calls with pastors around you trying to figure this out?
Yes. So I've met I've talked several times with other Lutheran pastors in the area, and then especially staying in contact with my seminary colleagues. They've been really helpful just supporting me emotionally and being able to check in and being able to say honestly, like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm trying so hard and just being able to be there for each other to say, hey, this is unprecedented. None of us know what we're doing, but we're all trying our best and, praying and discerning and trying to be led by God.
How has your congregation responded to you canceling in-person services? How did that go over?
Yeah, I think I announced it in worship last Sunday. I wanted to make sure that I caught as many people as possible. And, you know, I could tell that they were disappointed, but also so many people said, you know, that's the right call. I think we kind of knew that that we're called to love our neighbors. And right now, loving our neighbors looks like staying away from them. As hard as that is, being able to protect the most vulnerable members of our community.
Elderly people are at a higher risk of dying from the new coronavirus. What are the demographics like of your church?
Yeah, we've got a whole age range, but we definitely skew older. And so being able to say, hey, these beloved members are, we need to protect them and we need to watch out for them. And also now that we're not meeting in person, we need to connect with them, that we need to continue reaching out and not just say, we're not meeting in person, so we kept you safe, we did our job. That's just half of it. And now the real challenge of making sure we are still the body of Christ, staying connected, that's what we're doing right now.
What tips can you give us to help people stay spiritually connected at this time?
Yeah, I think, there is a proliferation of resources out there right now of worships that are being streamed online, of Bible studies. I know churches that are meeting online morning, noon, and night to do a daily office of prayer. And I know there are also people who don't have internet. And so being able to say, what works for me? What am I capable of doing? To say, you can totally believe in God by yourself, but it is harder. And so to be intentional about taking time for prayer, to take time to read the Bible, to reach out, and you can be honest with God about how this is really scary and this is different and you don't know what to do. And so this actually might be a time to deepen your relationship with God, even as our worship services are not meeting.
You've also suggested going on prayer walks or going in the wilderness. What might that be like?
Yeah, we know that, God created everything and that God speaks to us also through nature. And so thinking about walking around your neighborhood and noticing the beauty that God has created in ways that we maybe haven't been able to do before this crisis, when we're busy running around. Now is a time to stay still and to notice the ways that God is present among us, even in ways that we might not have noticed, especially in the book of nature.
Yeah, so getting out in nature, Wisconsin State Parks remain open to the public. That could be an outlet, too, for finding that spiritual space and connection.
Yeah, absolutely. To remind people that, we are socially distancing, but you're not stuck in your house. That you can still, within, 6 feet of other people, that you can still go outside and enjoy everything that God has made.
Pastor Bridget Jones is here from Bethel Lutheran Church. She stays with us from Superior. We're examining how churches and other community organizations are responding in this moment to the pandemic. Bethel Lutheran has been checking in on the well-being of its members this week, organizing volunteers to help run errands. How are you trying to help others in this time? Still time for your thoughts, your questions, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in a moment for more conversation about COVID-19. Maybe hear from you on what resources are in your community right here on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're hearing from community groups this hour all over the state on the response to the coronavirus pandemic. Most of Wisconsin's known cases of COVID-19 are located in the southern half of the state, but everyone is being affected, everyone, by closures and cancellations, broad limits on gatherings. How is your community responding to all of the changes? How is your church or your synagogue doing at this moment? Where is there a need for more support? How are you trying to fill it? Still time to talk. Your ideas, your situation. What do you want to share? 800-642-1234. And Pastor Bridget Jones from Bethel Lutheran Church in Superior stays with us. Pastor Bridget, we are in Lent, a 40-day period leading up to Easter when churches often see higher attendance and higher in-person donations. How might that affect the financial stability of churches?
That's I think a question that all of us are asking, especially as kind of our culture is changing and churches are shrinking. That Easter is usually the time that kind of gets us through the rest of the year, and so that's a question that a lot of us are asking. But I think this might be a time for churches to change how they reach out to one another and to say, even if we can't support this building anymore, we have learned how to be a community apart. That being said, we're still asking our congregation to send in their offering to remember that I'm still working, our secretary is still working, our janitor is still working, our musician is still working, that we are working harder, honestly, to make sure that we're still connected to everybody. And so this is definitely still a time to continue to support your church.
Yeah, and so your church, your staff, still hard at work, regardless of the situation here that you're seeing. So you're encouraging online mail donations?
Both. So yes, we don't have online giving as such, but we do have electronic transfers. And so being able to say, if you need a form, we'll mail it to you. That's a part that we haven't quite made it into the 21st century yet. But asking people to mail in their donations, their offering, and being able to say, you know, you can drop them at church as well. We have a mailbox that goes right into the church. For churches, synagogues, mosques, figuring out, you know, how will you continue to support your faith community in this time?
Do churches typically have emergency funds to help them get through these periods of lower donations? What do pastors say right now?
Some churches do. There's a huge diversity of churches. Some of them might have a large endowment fund for just a time as this. Others are really living kind of Sunday to Sunday. So it really depends on the churches. I think we're really going to see some people stepping up in amazing, godly ways. To remind people, don't worry. What happens, happens, and God will be with us no matter what.
What about the special services and the rites of passage, baptisms and confirmations or funerals?
Yeah, those are really hard right now because we can't gather as large communities. I know for my community, we won't be doing baptisms for a while. Funerals would have to be, you know, under 10 family members if we meet at all, being able to, you know, try to make sure everybody stays safe. But we will be, that's not to say that they're canceled, merely postponed, that there will be a time when we can gather again to celebrate these moments, that this is just a moment in time where we're not gathering, that these rites of passage are important, and that they will happen again.
How are you working this out with, like, mortuaries and families? Have you got to that point yet, and what might that look like?
I have not, fortunately. We have not had any deaths yet. I think it will come down to a careful consideration and, you know, what the family desires. And so if a family is saying, no, it's really important for the five of us to really get closure this way, then I know I'll figure it out. I know many others, though, are postponing services and waiting until more people can gather and celebrate someone's life altogether.
Pastor Bridget Jones is here. She is the leader of Bethel Lutheran Church in Superior, and we're looking at life after coronavirus, how people in Wisconsin are supporting one another. Are you in need of support right now? Do you have questions about your faith? How are you finding peace amid all the sudden changes? How are you helping others? Join the conversation. Still time for you. 800-642-1234. Email ideas@wpr.org. Pastor Bridget, how are you handling the sacrament of communion where Christians would drink wine and eat bread to symbolize the memory of Jesus?
Yes, That is a good question. There's a lot of debate about that in several different denominations because, you know, our theology really hasn't had to grapple with this yet. Currently, the stance of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America, the denomination I'm part of, we are fasting from communion this Lent. And so when I sent out my newsletter that had the liturgy for people to follow along at home and when I lead on Sunday, I will ask people to have a little bit of bread with them before we start the service. And when we get to the part where we normally do communion, I will remind them of how when the Israelites were wandering around in the desert and they were hungry, that God fed them. And so we will take a moment just to think of God's goodness and the ways that we are still being nourished in the midst of our hunger right now, and to think of all the other people who are still hungry, and to pray that God would feed them and that we would be part of those prayers. And so while we can't currently take part in this sacrament, there are other symbols that are available to us, other reminders of God's goodness in other times of crisis. And so being able to use those to make us still feel connected and to remind us that God is still good is really important.
So as you work through the online, the digital technology in conveying the spirituality and the togetherness, how have Bible chats been going? Have you tried it on the Google Hangout? How is it going?
Yeah, we tried one, and I sent out the wrong link. and so, yeah, again, it's me still fumbling around a little bit here, too. So I've met once, and it was really good. It's not, it's really just not the same, but it will tide us over to say it's good. Especially our church, we are, there's a group of us that have taken up the challenge to read the whole Bible in a year. And so those weekly check-ins are important for people they're important for me to have accountability. And so we will continue to meet online so we can keep up with our readings and to talk about what we've read, knowing that sometimes there's some challenges and it's not the same, but it's still important.
Have you met any couples who are, have you been meeting with any couples who are planning a wedding?
No, my next wedding is in the fall, so that makes things a little bit easier. Although now is probably a really good time for couples to figure out, like, is this going to work for us? Because, you know, if you can make it trapped at home working together for a long period of time, like, you'll be good.
This is a good test for those couples. Pastor Bridget, I've been asking this to so many people, our guests coming on air. What challenge are you working with today, and what does your day look like?
Well, honestly, today is usually my day off. So yesterday being able to, you know, I still have to write a sermon for Sunday. And so the challenge of this last week was making sure that everyone felt informed, that people would know that our services have all been moved online, that our newsletter would go out, that people would have the things they need so they feel prepared, planning contingencies. Now is the part where I get to this towards the end of the week. Now is when I start the rest of the work that I'm called to do of checking in, reading the Bible and checking in with commentaries and figuring out, you know, what does this Word of God say to us, to the people that I know gathering with me, what does this say to us right now?
Well, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Pastor Bridget Jones, leader of Bethel Lutheran Church in Superior. Coming up, it's On Point, taking stock of an incredible week. We'll have the latest facts and figures, the science and politics. That's On Point coming up next. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. The Morning Show is produced by Colleen Leahy, Laura Pavin, Jana Rose Schleiss, Courtney Everett, Keegan Kyle, L. Malik Anderson, Stephen Potter, and Joe Tarr. Lee Rayburn is our technical director, and Molly Stentz is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.